This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham.
Collaborative.
Experimentation.
The next idea.
We need a participation revolution, and we need it fast.
We might be using electricity the wrong way. A new report indicates maybe Michigan can meet projected energy shortfalls just by changing how we use power instead of having to build new power plants. Today's guest on The Next Idea is Lisa Clark. She's the president of Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council. That's a business trade association representing companies in the state's advanced energy sector. Before we start talking about a potential solution, let's talk about the problem. There are projected shortfalls in meeting electricity demand in the Lower Peninsula of Michigan. How bad is it, and how soon will we have to deal with it?
We don't think it's super bad, Lester. This is something that we've been planning for a while, and the Michigan Public Service Commission takes a close look at what we refer to as capacity, what energy is available out there. However, in the Lower Peninsula, we are certainly going through an energy transition, and many people are excited about this energy transition as we're taking older coal-fired plants offline, basically because they're uneconomical to run. So as we're taking those plants offline, one of the things that we're looking at for the future is, what does our diverse energy portfolio mix look like? So we're not going to transition to 100% anything. You know, right now in Michigan, we're using around 30% from nuclear generation. And then so the coal and the natural gas are shifting as we're seeing more and more renewables come online. We're just looking into the future, and the Public Service Commission does planning for this to try to think about what should that portfolio mix look like.
So in a situation where demand peaks, it's usually summertime, lots of air conditioners on, stuff like that. A lot of power companies build so-called peaker plants. That might be something like a jet-powered engine and a generator that only kicks on during high demand. Why isn't that the solution to this problem?
Peaker plants are certainly one way to go. However, when we think about generation, part of generation, of course, is fuel cost. And so it's the cost of the coal, cost of the natural gas, cost of nuclear. And as we think about those fuel costs out in the future, we don't know what they're going to be. We don't know how to project those costs. We can make some guesses, and we know that that needs to be a portion of our diverse portfolio. However, one of the things that is sort of old technology come new again is, how do we modify behaviors? So how do we look at when we're using the electricity and using that electricity differently? People can think of this at home as shifting how they're using things at home, for example. So I've got a dishwasher that's got a four-hour delay on it, and I'll shift it to different times. So it's that sort of concept. It's when we get to those peak hours, who is able to use electricity differently during those peak hours to take more power offline so that we're able to make sure that the people that need the power during those peak hours have it. You know, obviously, elderly folks who need the air conditioning, if we're talking about a summer August peak, or manufacturing plants that if they come offline will do real damage to the machinery or to what they're processing. We want to make sure that when we use electricity differently, we are not causing limitations, you know, certainly to people or also to manufacturing or the economy.
I want to break this down a little bit, but I have to tell you, anytime I hear somebody talking about energy and changing behavior, I think of Jimmy Carter asking us to wear sweaters, and that did not go over very well. And I'm just wondering how you're going to manage that here. Let's start with the manufacturers. I know a lot of some programs where a big energy user, such as a factory, agrees to shut down during peak demand moments in exchange for a substantial reduction in what it pays for power. How similar is this report's recommendations to that?
Yeah, it's very similar. So it's being more sophisticated about using those demand reductions, but you're right online. So, for example, I was talking with a forging company on the west side of the state, and they said, look, you know, we can go down for 15 minutes in the summer. That's not a big deal. But we can't go down for 45 because they would have challenges to getting their line back up. And so it's thinking in a sophisticated way about how do we make sure that we are supporting those that need to stay up, but, you know, those that can go down have the ability to go down.
Now, the homeowners, we're seeing more and more smart thermostats. That's one thing. But the other solution is letting the power company actually control air conditioning or appliances. That's a whole different idea. How would you overcome resistance to that?
Yeah, it certainly is a whole different idea. And, of course, we're having lots of conversations in this state, too, relitigating this idea of smart meters, et cetera. You know, these types of technology really do enable us to do different things in our homes. And a lot of us, you know, we don't want to be tracking our energy use from minute to minute, day to day, month to month even, right? You know, we want to save money. We want to make sure we're paying the lowest rate possible. And we want to really be hands-off, so to speak. We don't want to be tracking this all the time. So what are some of the other types of ways that homeowners can do that? As you mentioned, with air conditioning. Now, this isn't the, you know, we're not going to use air conditioning for 4 hours on a hot summer day. This is, oh, okay, we are hit peak load right now. I'm going to turn off some of these air conditioners for a couple of minutes. So we're not talking about extended duration. And these are things that people could opt into. So it's only if you want to. If you don't want to do it, and if you know that, you know, you're having a party and you're going to have air conditioning on full blast, you opt out and you do what you need to do on your own time. But for those that do want to opt in and, you know, want to take advantage of this type of system, lower overall energy costs, et cetera, how do we make it simple for them to do so? And how do we make it so that it's really not visible, so it's transparent, or it's transparent what we're doing, but it's not visible to them on a day-to-day basis, the changes.
So if we can avoid building more power plants, how much money are we talking about reducing just using this reduction during peak demands times?
When we talk about peak demand, it's really 1% of hours in the year. So we're talking about, you know, very, very, very small window. And for that 1% of the hours in the year, we have to build 10% of our capacity. So we have to build a whole lot of capacity to cover that 1% of hours. So if we do more of this, what we call peak shaving, because you're limiting that peak, we can save up to $900 million overall, because we think that there is the ability to shave around 1,400 megawatts. So 1,400 megawatts would be a couple of fairly large generation plants.
Well, I'm more worried about my power bill. How would that be reflected in my power bill?
Aren't we all worried about our power bill? And so that would mean that there is not additional generation that has to go online. So anytime we don't have to build generation, your power bill is going to be lower.
Changing behavior is one thing. I'm wondering what kind of government hurdles you'd have to deal with to see this approach taken.
It's something that the legislature and the Public Service Commission have already been thinking through. One of the first hurdles, of course, is deployment of the types of technologies that are necessary to do it. And that's something that our utilities have been national leaders on. Michigan's out in front and has been deploying smart meters and is almost done. Both consumers and DTE are almost done deploying smart meters. So some of your listeners who aren't in the investor-owned utilities might not be at the same point. But a lot of the co-ops and munis are doing a great job as well. In the big energy legislation that people may have heard things about passing in December in lame duck, there was language in there for what we call demand response. So trying to enable it as an opportunity for dealing with capacity and other ways that we balance our portfolio. Also, our Public Service Commission has been thinking about demand response, how to incorporate it. Consumers Energy just recently made some more steps towards bringing additional demand response online. And of course, it's going to look different for industrial users or commercial users compared to resident users as well. It's always harder to make a change when you're talking about smaller distributed users like residents. But if you can make a change with many residents, obviously you're having a bigger impact on the grid. There's a lot of momentum in this direction.
I have one more question, and that's how renewable energy is considered. Is this in place of renewable energy, or how does solar, wind, and so on factor into the problem?
I see them all as a complement. So you've got this diverse portfolio, and you've got these different types of energy resources. So the benefit of wind and solar is that they don't have fuel in the future. That's a big benefit. However, they work at variable times. And so what we need to do is we need to fix them into the grid with forecasting so that we know when we're going to have the wind and solar. And when we don't, we can complement it with other resources like natural gas or demand response. And so it's fitting these pieces together because guess what? Solar does work really well during these peak times. So the peak times that we're talking about right now, that 1% of hours in the year, is actually when solar does work really well. It's just these different resources and fitting together their different profiles in a least cost way for Michigan.
Lisa Clark is the president of the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council. Thanks very much for talking with us about this.
Happy to be here, Lester.
Support for the Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.